Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. We're doing this on Zoom, and we're doing Zoom for free. So we've got like 38 minutes to go from now. Hi, Bob.
I didn't have that much to say. No, because I only have politics to talk about. And do you really want me to hear me 38 minutes on politics?
I agree with you, Bob. The Democrats not standing to applaud that child fighting cancer. They hate children.
So disrespectful. They really do. Well, finally, someone has the guts to say it.
I got to tell you, I don't know if this is a coping mechanism or just pure ignorance. My knowledge of Trump addressing and doing the whole speechy thing is about 48 seconds on Twitter. And then beyond that, I just went back to giggle at the Raptors win over Orlando. That was my Tuesday night.
I'm glad that the Raptors won. Sad to see Jalen Suggs is so hurt because he was pulling his career together nicely.
Yeah.
And he seems like he's one of those players that's a rootable player. You want them to do well because they play the quote unquote the right way, not like those dirty Democrats.
Exactly.
But no, I would say my approach to last night was the opposite.
Yeah.
I warmed up for the address with about 11 hours of doom scrolling.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to settle down with a good 9 consecutive hours of doom tweeting.
That's not good. Like,
it really isn't.
It isn't. I wouldn't recommend my way either. My way is more just hide the head in the sand, and I wouldn't recommend the doom scrolling. But are we at a point right now with politics? Is there another way? Is there another way?
I don't know. The middle way. You and I are like the Laurel and Hardy of life. I mean, you look at the two of us and go, well, those fellows don't go together.
And yet they do.
I had an observation, not just about last night in politics, but just stuff generally. One that I think you'll appreciate. It'll incorporate the Oscars and the Super Bowl and a bunch of stuff. The world has really become professional wrestling. And I don't mean in the sense that it's become silly or intellectually downgraded. What I mean is it's become spectacle. And if you're not communicating through spectacle, you're not communicating. This is, I think, the power of Trump, is he really understands the bread and circuses that resides deep inside our souls.
Yeah.
And he's basically Vince McMahon. They're just master promoters with daddy issues and are probably sociopaths.
With the exception that Vince, I think, is more of a morally centered and good person than Trump. Well,
I believe they call that damning with faint praise. But
I believe they do.
Yeah, I was thinking about why the Super Bowl halftime show became so talked about. And it's because it wasn't designed to be a show. It was designed to be a discussion. It was designed to be something that lived on the internet. Did you see what happened?
Yeah.
Did you hear what he said? If it was just Kendrick going out and doing a really great performance the way Prince did a whole bunch of great numbers, or U2 did a great bunch of numbers, then people would be like, I've seen musicians be good. It's, what are you doing for me? What are you, how are you jacking me up? How are you sending me out into the world?
To that point about just everything is about spectacle, the Super Bowl, they tried so hard to make Kansas City the villains, even though they never were the villains. But to your point, Bob, about it's about wrestling, you need a baby face, you need a heel. They tried to make Kansas City a heel, but Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, they're not heels. The city of Kansas City isn't a heel.
When you look at the Oscars, you and I grew up loving the Oscars, like deeply, passionately loving the Oscars, and probably still do. But we're in the minority now because we love movies and we love a night that celebrates movies, which is what the Oscars aspires to be. And I think both you and I would agree when it goes too far away from that, it's less interesting for us. Like, I don't want the Will Smith moment. I actually just want great films to be celebrated.
Yeah.
But in the world of spectacle, people are like, well, you know, what are you doing for me? Like, what am I going to tweet about?
And you need grand political gestures, which are important and are needed. You need as many different pins on your lapel about what you support, and what pins you don't have says what you don't support. I'm good for all of that, and I'm good for a nice dash of that in the Oscars. But when it gets too performative, I'm like, listen, I'm not against what you're saying, but on this 3.5-hour block, I'm here for movies and to celebrate movies. I thought they did a really good job of it on Sunday. Conan had one great, had a great joke about finally someone standing up to powerful Russians talking about Honora. I thought it was a good show.
It was too long, and having the hosts, like each representative from each film, talk about the person in the audience for costume design. We don't need the costume design award to go for 11 minutes.
That's true. My only pushback, as someone without children who wasn't on air until 2 p.m. on Monday, they could have gone as late as they wanted. So I was fine with it, but I'd rather have more movie montages and less costume design talk.
Sean Fennessy from The Big Picture, I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but he talked about how up until 2004, how the vast majority of Best Picture winners grossed $100 million or more at the box office. And since 2004, there's only been eight. And I think this is just because the Oscars have turned their back on popular movies. The thing about the Oscars before, like Silence of the Lambs, which was a massive winner, was an enormously successful film and a great one, as was Return of the King. There's any number of films, you know, Gandhi was spectacle, and, you know, it's not a popcorn movie, but a lot of people went to go see it. There was this idea that you were celebrating movies that people saw.
Yes.
And again, to go back to spectacle, what you really wanted was Barbenheimer.
And right? You had that last like that, year.
That's, but what is Barbenheimer? Barbenheimer is a well-booked match with real yeah. heat.
Oh, it is. In this corner, he helped murder millions of people. And in this corner, she murdered the self-esteem of a lot of little girls. It's Barbie versus Oppenheimer. Next.
In this corner, there's a film that reminds you of Oscars past. It was 3 hours long, and it stars a white guy who's going to get the Best Actor award. And in this corner, an upstart young female director who's making a point about civilization.
If they wanted to do that on Sunday, they would have gone with Wicked, which was practical effects, song and dance, some great performances. I'm biased because I've seen Wicked a couple times on stage. But if you wanted for the masses, then it would have been a night of Wicked. And I loved Honora. I was happy. You know, I was fine to see it win, but you would have gone Wicked.
So I watched the Elimination Chamber on Saturday, and I've been getting into wrestling lately because I've been thinking just about with it now at Netflix and our history through Off the Record with wrestling. There might be some opportunities there, and I'm exploring it. And so I'm wetting my beak back in the wrestling world. And I've been watching it pretty closely for about the last 3-4 months. What really jumps out is how many finishing moves are in each match now. Hmm. When we were kids growing up in the 80s and 90s, a finishing move was that big final move, the neck breaker, the pile driver, the Cobra clutch.
Yeah. The Jimmy Superfly Snuka off the top rope, you know, the DDT.
And all of the match building to get you to that point was, you know, punches and arm bars and suplexes and body slams, a lot of crowd work. And now I'm watching the matches, and that suplex off the top rope might happen 9 or 10 times to each guy. And they just bounce back up because you can't tell a story anymore. Like, the ring was always about the story. And as a result, like, I still think wrestling is fascinating and they do great storytelling, but the storytelling in the ring has really devolved. And I think it's because you can't have a match with more than one finishing move, but it goes back to spectacle and even sports, right?
One point about wrestling. If you get working with Netflix or whatever, and you join like the writer's room or something, or you're working on the creative on some wrestling storylines, that would be awesome. That'd be such a cool job.
I've always loved wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm not quite Jeff Merrick level love of wrestling, but we grew up together watching it, and we'd go back to his place and read like Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and we were both really into it. We both had pictures of Tommy Wildfire Rich bleeding all over himself in his platinum blonde hair. You know, we were pretty down the rabbit hole. Yeah, so I'm just seeing the wrestling world everywhere. Like, Trump treats politics the way Vince treated politics. Like, there really isn't much difference. And people respond to it. And I'm not saying people are stupid, because stories are very, very, very powerful. One of the things I hate about the left is how smug the left can be about the power of story. Because the left has its own stories. You know, when Obama talks about hope, it's a story. Now, he's more articulate and he's not as whiz-bang about it. And sure, I think Trump is sort of like the Nickelback of human beings.
Wow, Chad Kroeger getting astray.
You know, but in the end, like, we're tied together by stories, and now everything has to have it. Like, I thought about how successful the Super Bowl halftime show was because it had a story. and it had booking and it had real heat and all of the wrestling components. And the Oscars didn't. And the Oscars meant so much more and was enjoyed so much less.
The heat thing for sure. If the beef with Lamar and Drake had never existed, the halftime show would not been as anticipated before or talked about afterwards. But I'm wildly biased on the Oscars. I still really enjoyed it. I saw every film. You know, I like the bit where Conan O'Brien was showing everyone this brand new device called going to the movies, and it was done in a really clever way.
88 cell phones tied together to create one giant screen.
Yes, that was so good. So that was great. You had some heat, Demi Moore and Mikey Madsen. So, you know, you had the, if this was college basketball, the young upstart team with the freshman point guard versus the blue blood North Carolina in Demi Moore.
It was so Michigan versus Duke in 1991.
Exactly. Yes. It's the Fab Five was Mikey Madsen and Duke was Demi Moore.
I like that analogy very much. They're going to keep, I mean, even the president, God help me. Even the prime minister says they're just going to keep booing. We're going to keep booing. Mm-hmm. I think my plan now to go to taped anthems is probably a good one.
It is. Yeah. And I mean, what's funny now, you know, I was looking at it going, okay, which Canadian hockey team is hosting an American team? I don't know if there was booing in the Oilers game because the Oilers gave up 6 goals. So then the anthem didn't become as much of a storyline.
Yeah. I almost feel like if you don't at least stay seated, then you're doing something anti-Canada at this point. This isn't, you know, Colin Kaepernick taking a knee and everyone feeling like he's gone out of his way to make a statement. This is really the bare minimum, I think.
Yeah.
Well, because we're under attack, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you didn't watch that last night, but it was confirmed yesterday. We are under attack.
Jesus. I mean.
What lunacy, eh?
It really is, you know, and the shame of it all is, you know, if you look at the relationship between these two countries, we've got a pretty damn good track record. And for everyone who talks about booing, I remember Montreal Expos games after 9/11, when in Montreal and tiny crowds of angry Canadians, but they're angry at their baseball team, bringing American flags and going, hey, we support you guys. We're with you on this. Yeah. But I mean, what's going on now? It's just, you know, it's ugly. And, you know, as I always do, we always take everything to our worlds. My message to anyone out there, you don't need to boycott California wine because, again, I bet most of them didn't vote for Trump.
My point is if you don't boycott California wine, then they're never going to feel the pain and this economy is going to be bankrupted. And this isn't about an individual personal relationship. This is about two governments and your survival.
All right.
I feel so incredibly strongly about this created a list of Ontarian foods that I think people should eat more.
Ooh, okay. Well, you do that. But let's go there.
Blueberries, delicious. Apples, mm-hmm. great. Corn, we have good beer. We have good wine. We make good cheeses. Our tomatoes are excellent. Our peaches are top notch. Butter tarts are a fantastic Canadian treat. We actually have good fresh fish. If you find locally sourced fresh fish, it's amazing. Pickerel, perch, these are Canadian staples. Pea meal, of course. I was thinking about Germany, where my sister lives, and they have seasons for food. We went over once and it was asparagus season, and all the restaurants would carry a particular kind of asparagus that was
white asparagus. The white asparagus.
White asparagus, exactly. It's called Spargel in German. And we went over there and it was delicious and people ordered it. It's not just that they were being pro-German. I think they were being pro-good food and that was the time their food was the best. But we live basically in a strip mall mentality where everything should be available all the time and it doesn't have to be good as long as it's available.
All right, let's go down this rabbit hole and I'll give some other wine recommendations. And I get your point about boycotting California wine. We got lots of full-bodied red wines right here in Ontario or British Columbia. Back in the day, we got excited about Dr. Zeus.
Dr. Like, Pepper?
No, I was going to say
Dr. Christmas. Zeus?
The Whoville and the Grinch.
Dr. Seuss.
We got excited for the Grinch because it came along once a year. But now we can mm-hmm. watch the Grinch all the time. The Grinch was more special when you only got to see it once in December. So it should be the same thing with your food for seasons. You don't get summer food in February. You take the February food. You don't need the California produce, you know, in the month of February. So to your point, we can embrace every season has its foods.
The thing is, we have a long winter. So our season for food is basically 2/3 of the year, really. But most of the food, I eat strawberries now, and it's like chewing on styrofoam peanuts that are out of a packing crate.
Yeah.
They're frozen. They're pumped up with water. Most of our stuff has been designed to travel internationally. I would love, look, subsidize the farmers, appreciate the local, lean into good, healthy foods because it's actually more fun and better for you. And that's how we be Canadian, is mm-hmm. by being Canadian geographically. It's a huge part of life.
Port Dover perch and pickerel is incredible. If you drive north of the city, I see cows everywhere. We can get steak right here. There's cows wandering around all over the place.
How different would life be if the most delicious meats didn't come from the easiest to kill animals? Like if the most delicious steak was lion as opposed to cow. I think we would have a lot less of it. It feels unfair to the cow that it's so easy to take out a cow. They're not much of a fighter back.
Yeah.
But if say like great white sharks had the best steaks, I think we'd see a lot less steak.
Agreed. Now we just got to find a way to properly season raccoon, and we never need to, we never need to leave the 416 for all of our protein needs.
Pat McAfee. I just saw his name on one of my notes. And I thought about eating raccoon and Pat McAfee, and for some reason, they fit together.
I imagine Pat McAfee had a different reaction to the speeches last night.
Pat McAfee called Canada a terrible country, and then I think, yeah, well, because during that Elimination Chamber, he does broadcasting for the WWE, they were booing the anthem, and it came up twice, at least that I heard, two distinct times where he said, they gotta stop booing this anthem, you know, and he was pissed off about it. And I think someone sat him down and said, well, I think it's because we attacked them.
Yeah.
I think they were upset because they were just standing there and we came up behind them with the ring bell and smacked them in the back of the head.
Which, by the way, a much more vicious weapon than just the steel chair. When you took the bell, shit's going down when you use the bell as your weapon.
I've never understood the logic of finishing moves because you could hit someone in the head with a bell.
Yeah.
And that seemed to do about as much damage as launching him off the top of a 30-foot cage into a series of tables.
Mankind really needed to rethink what he his approach to winning matches was.
He's a hell of a show, though. Okay, trade deadline coming up this week.
Yep.
I want to talk to you about it. Before I do, I just want to make a quick point. I wish the NHL had three-point wins because then it would be clear right around now who's a buyer and who's a seller instead of all these teams in the mushy middle. And it would be so much more exciting because we'd see more movement. Because teams would have a better sense of who they are.
You are 100% right. A team like the St. Louis Blues, I'm joking. Everyone needs to root for the Blues to lose tonight to the Kings because maybe Brady Shen will get
traded. Brady Shen shakes loose. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Root for the Kings. Brady Shen gets shaken, loose, whatever it is. I'm going to push back, even though what you're saying makes sense. I do. You're right. You are right. The 3 point for a win, it would better to define who are the great teams. But at the very least, in the NHL, they have there's legitimate hope for deep playoff runs for so many more teams than in the NBA. In the NBA, you can make a case for three teams. That's it. No offense.
I don't think that's true. Miami went to the finals as a play-in team just the other year.
They are the exception.
Dallas was not a dominant team, and they went to the final.
When Dallas made their trades and got Gafford, then they went on the run in the second half of the season.
They weren't touted at the beginning of the year or even the middle of the year as an NBA powerhouse. I actually think you're underselling the parity in the NBA because we're so used to it being two or three teams, but that's kind of changing.
If you go and look,
Indiana had a run.
Yeah, but
they made it to the conference final.
But in the general, it's always going to be the favorites. If you look right now at the betting boards, there is three teams. And there's a big drop-off between Boston and OKC. Cleveland is still a distant third, and people still aren't buying into Cleveland winning the title.
Okay. Well, this is your way of making the regular season more interesting.
Yeah.
You're subsidizing the regular season with a flattened series of points, as opposed to the natural order of things where the victor should reap the spoils and get 3 points.
I'm sorry, Bob, if I'm...
You have high taxes on points.
I'm here for the middle class, Bob. If you're here just for the elitists at the top, that's fine. That's fine. I want the middle class.
Oh, man. Okay, well, you make a compelling point.
The trade deadline, I have, when it comes to the Maple Leafs, to me, always the most interesting thing is it's up to the players to convince the executives it's all right to sacrifice the future for the present. Like, it's only one game, but if the Leafs kick Vegas's ass tonight, I wonder if that has any impact on what Treliving, how he feels about the 2026 first round pick, or Easton Cowan, or Nick Robertson, or Fraser Minton. I do, and it's one game, and maybe I'm just doing sports radio hot takery for a Wednesday. But I do love the concept of it's up to the players to convince the executives you need to sacrifice the future.
One game, you know, it's hard to pin it on one game, although of course this is a good one. I think you're absolutely right, though, that I think most teams want to be rewarded with a chance to really win if they've been doing what they're supposed to do, playing hard, playing smart. This team, you know, I think you can say under Craig Berube has tried to do what Craig Berube has asked them to do. They feel like they've earned the right for a better shot at the title this year. So your point's a really good one. It's a really good one about how you kind of, it's like Dr. Phil says, you tell people how you want to be treated.
When was the last time you watched Dr. Phil?
It's been a while. I keep looking at him and thinking Jeffrey Tambor is a better option.
Oh my God. Yes. Just replace the two. Well, not replace.
Just swap the two out.
Yes. Oh, I'd be a big fan of that. At the very least, with the NHL trade deadline, there's a lot more teams you can say you should try to go for it because you can win it all. How many in the NBA would you say trade a whole bunch of first round picks because you can win it all?
Conversely, there's also a lot of teams that go, I don't know if we can win it this year because we're in a cluster of 7 or 8 teams. So maybe I'm not willing to sacrifice. The protecting the middle class with treating them and respecting their efforts is harder to do when you don't have 3-point wins because there's no clear answer as to how good your shot is at a title.
Yeah,
that's the problem with it. And I find like the Leafs are in this position because how good are the Leafs? They're good. Are they excellent? I don't know. It's hard to tell. There's probably 3 or 4 other teams that seem about as good as them.
That Debbie Downer, James Myrtle pointed out over the last like 40 games, Toronto's ability to defend against high danger chances has gone from like 3rd to 20th. Like that number's gone way, way down. And I'm like, come on, James, we're enjoying the Craig Berube narrative. Don't fuck it up with your facts and numbers and shit.
I love it when people rally around a team because they're going to play harder and they're in better shape than they've ever been in. Yeah, and then they get to the playoffs and the team with more talent wins. You make a really good point. I think it's the most important point that the way you see the team is how you decide its future. This is all about perception, that if you're the Myrtle group and you say, okay, well, maybe not this year. Maybe you don't mortgage the future because they're not. And I'm not saying the Myrtle group, but like you can lean towards the things that suggest to you, you know what? Keep your powder dry. We've got a window. And then there's another group out there who say there's no clear-cut winner. Here, there's no front runner that you feel you can't beat. These guys are battle tested. You're coming off of the Four Nations, which I think will probably lift Marner's game. Tavares is playing well. He'll probably never play this well again. You've got Stolarz, who's turning into a credible goalie. You feel pretty good about him. There's just a lot of reasons to get excited or not excited because Tanev's out.
Tanev will be back. I think you go all in.
So do I.
I think you go all in because the one thing that you can see is how fast things change in sports. 2 years ago, Boston set a record for points in the regular season. Now they're sellers, and they just lost like 6-3 to Nashville. Sam Darnold was the feel-good story of the NFL, and then suddenly he wasn't. The Phoenix Suns and the 76ers were going to be really dangerous teams this year, and now they're not. Like, things can change so fast that I think the Leafs, you go all in with the points you're bringing up, better goaltending, Tanev and McCabe, So for me, I go all in.
You don't have a ton of resources to work with, which is always scary. It's not like you've got the Oklahoma City Thunder war chest. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of good prospects. There's a couple of players who feel like they'll be NHLers. And there's a limited number of draft capital. So if you go all in and try to get a Braden Schenn or a Brock Nelson or whatever, you do have to gut the future more than you'd like. Like we're dipping into the savings here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is second mortgage time. We're putting a second mortgage.
Exactly.
We're putting a second mortgage because we want to start a bakery. Like, that's what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, fortune favors the brave, as they say. But yeah, I love that. This is the second mortgage deadline. And I'm with you, actually. I think because my biggest thing is that I trust the goaltending because I think Stolarz is going to be good. And I think Wall can back him up. That is something the Leafs have not had in modern memory. That kind of confidence in your goaltending. I don't know how long Tanev's body is going to hold out. And I don't know that Tavares is ever going to be this good again. He's having a great year. God bless him. I'm so happy because how could you not root for that guy? And for all of us who said he's the problem, this year he's not.
Yeah.
He's been good.
And how quick it can go. I heard the guys on Overdrive talking about this. Steven Stamkos has gone like 13 straight games without a point. You can be a really good, older, productive veteran, and then you wake up one day and you're not anymore.
Well, I'm going to throw this out here too. Marner doesn't have a deal. They chose not to do it during the year. I'm assuming he's going to stay, but you don't know that.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm assuming he's going to stay. But what if he comes out and says, well, I want Austin Matthews money. And someone else is willing to give it to me, and I'll leave to take it. I don't see that scenario. But there is an elephant in the room where your second most important player is unsigned, and anything to your point is possible. Windows are such interesting things because on paper, you can make a reasonable guess how long a window will last. But in real life with health and weird off years, you really don't know what your window is. You got to live for the moment, Matt. Eckhart Tolle.
Is that a third line winger that the Leafs should go after?
It's Yanni Gourde. If we don't get Yanni Gourde, we get Eckhart Tolle.
No, I want Yanni Gourde and go get Nelson.
Yeah.
So we have 6 minutes left.
Okay.
Can I throw out what I think on the NHL trade deadline, the number one deal that would create the greatest headlines?
Of course. I love that idea.
Sidney Crosby gets traded to the Washington Capitals.
So good. See, okay, wait a second. Put on your Booker's hat. Well, let's make this wrestling. Okay, book me a match. Wow.
Two guys that at one point actually genuinely didn't like each other when they were ascending to be NHL stars. Two very different players. Two guys that have done a lot of winning. Two guys who want one last chance. Two guys who both have salt and pepper in their hair. This story would be big on the American side because it's Washington. Ovechkin's a star. Crosby's one of the few NHL players who's Canadian that Americans know. You have every different narrative combined in this. Crosby goes to Washington, to me, is my favorite trade that'll never happen.
Okay, so I'm going to add another layer to this, if I may, because I love this, and that's an amazing, I love it. I'm going to try to find the wrestling equivalent.
Ooh.
So this is like booking The Rock and Triple H, because you have two guys who came up at the same time, who generally in the locker room were both thought of as this is probably going to be the next great guy and lead the company. In Sidney Crosby, you've got the institutional guy, the Team Canada guy, the guy who really was inside the hockey world and dominated it. And that's Triple H, who eventually became wrestling's number one executive and labeled himself The Game.
Yeah.
And then Ovechkin, who's just pure entertainment and is just so much fun to watch and everybody loves how he plays, is The Rock, who is pure entertainment, the most exciting man in sports entertainment. It's the institution versus the sizzle. It's The Rock versus Triple H.
And now they're together. They've both been very productive this year, despite their age. To me, imagine them on the same line together, two former enemies now teaming up. I mean, that's like half of every Hollywood movie.
I think we've stumbled onto something brilliant here. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any more? You can't have any as good as that.
Elias Pettersson getting traded to the Rangers to be with JT Miller would be funny.
Okay, what's the resume? So two people who hate each other and then as a punishment have to work together again?
Yeah, but they
Let me
legitimately
see.
don't like each other. So, yeah, I mean, I was coming up with goofy ones on the show yesterday, so.
I think this is Ultimate Warrior being brought back to end to the WCW just so he could humiliate himself to Hogan to make Hogan ascendant. So they basically brought him in, had Hogan beat him, and then shipped him back out again. So if you see JT Miller as the Hogan in this, okay.
So that was one of my other goofy ones. By the way, circling back to the start of this, was Hulk Hogan in the crowd yesterday for the whole
I don't think
Trump
so.
speech
Actually,
stuff?
I tweeted out the other day that it appears that America has entered its Hollywood Hogan years.
That's good.
Nobody liked it.
Well, of course they didn't.
On Blue Sky, though, Blue Sky's pretty formal. I had to quit Twitter. I just can't give Elon my money.
That's fair.
It is fair, but it's also not fun. See, here's the problem with doing the right thing. Like, you don't want to give up California wines.
Well, it's actually more I feel bad for the farmers and the people that tend the
That's
land.
fair.
It's more about that. Trust me, I could go my whole life without drinking California wine. I got tons of alternatives. This isn't going to shock you, Bob. I have a stock fridge.
Well, also in a nation, like many nations that you can draw from. Who's your
Exactly.
number one nation right now?
Number one nation, France is first. I might have Canada at number two. I could have
Good
Canada at number
heavens.
two, Italy three, Germany four, New Zealand five. Ooh, Spain. Spain over New Zealand? Bob, we only have 2 minutes left. You can't make me try to
Okay, give me a
do a
couple quick
wine.
Canadian wines. Give me three Canadian wines.
Okay, three Canadian wines. One that's reasonably priced, Westcott Chardonnay, Niagara. They'll do you if you don't want Napa Chard. If you want to do a Pinot Noir, as always, Thomas Batchelder, he's got you covered. Finally, if you need a great wine under $20, I've talked about it a ton. Creekside, Syrah, entry level, under $15, and it tastes like Syrah. So for people that like Washington State Syrah, head over to Creekside. So there's some big full-bodied wines for you, whatever your taste.
And on the food side, if you're in Toronto, just head down to St. Lawrence Market and grab yourself a pea meal sandwich.
Hell yes. I'm going to be going there later on today.
Pair pea meal with a wine.
So you get that saltiness there. I'm going to go, you know what? I'm going to keep it simple. I'll go with an Ontario Gamay, whatever producer you like. It's one of the best grapes we do, high acid. It'll cut through all the proteins of the pea meal bacon.
Well, Matt, it's time for us to wrap up. I'm glad you took the brave stand of letting the Democrats know this is unacceptable and can't go any further.
And Bob, as someone who's on Blue Sky, you had the courage to take down Trump. Congratulations to you as well.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.